Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and thought leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
And welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBall, your host. We have very fashionable people in multiple senses here that we're going to be entering the world of fashion, for which I feel like an alien from another planet, but we're going to go fashion-wise. Let's start. We have here Jana Pelequin, who's the organizer, I guess the head honcho organizer of Minnesota Fashion Week, Fashion Week Minnesota. Is that right?
I'm the co-founder of Fashion Week Minnesota, along with Sarah Edwards, and we founded Fashion Week MN about 3.5 years ago as a platform to help promote the different fashion brands, designers, and fashion makers in the Twin Cities and all the work that they're doing and help bring that, bring greater awareness to that.
So that we can go beyond being a world of jeans and down coats, trying to get beyond that Minnesota normal.
Yeah, and just, you know, the idea of supporting local fashion and the different, you know, all the amazing local designers and brands that we have here instead of, you know, just shopping at the mall, like, let's support some local businesses.
Right. Some originality. And we have some original people here, born all on their own. We have Karen Morris, who's from Hong Kong, I understand. Mm-hmm. And you're a milliner.
Yes.
What's a milliner?
Hi. My name is Karen Morris, and my brand is Karen Morris Millinery. For the millinery means making ladies' hat.
Oh.
Yes.
Just ladies' hats.
Yes.
So you didn't make the ball cap that Houston was wearing.
Yeah, you can go. I mean, that we call haberdashery.
Oh.
Yes,
hey.
For men's hat, yeah.
Okay, we're going to expand our vocabulary here. We got millinery down, that's ladies' hats. And then we're going to go to Houston White, who is wearing a little bit of haberdashery on his head.
Yeah, so my name is Houston White. I'm a kid from North Minneapolis. And I always say fashion started for me in the halls of North Highway. I mean... North High School, not the highway.
The hallway.
That school.
See,
was...
I think you're thinking of runway.
Yeah, yeah.
The hallway was a runway for you.
The hallway was a runway. There were a lot of folks who shied away from coming to that school because, you know, friends could be harsh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now as a designer, years later, I'm reminded of all the young urban kids who walk up and down the streets. Those blocks are runways. And so I draw a lot of inspiration from what they're wearing and try to show them that they are culture. And how can we take things that they're wearing and elevate them in a grander sense?
I was going to say elevator fashion, but that's not what you meant.
Nah, kind of like the music, the right? It's not so cool.
That's great. Well, if there was any one thing that kind of little story or whatever that turned you toward a life of fashion consciousness, what was that?
You know, I think it's the importance of self-expression. And, you know, I own a barbershop in the inner city. And so I see a lot of times urban kids don't necessarily own what they're wearing. You know, they look outward instead of inward.
What do you mean?
So, you know, I grew up in the 90s and there were a lot of brands that were kind of Eurocentric in nature, sort of like, you know, Polo and Tommy Hilfiger. And these brands exploded because of urban culture, because of LL Cool J and all these rappers who were wearing this stuff. And so at that time, in my opinion, there should have been brands that emanated from the culture from which it just expanded them immensely. So for me, it's like I wanted to create a brand that was very urban, that literally a kid can go back and trace the origin story to North High, to my aunt's basement on 8th and Logan, to growing up when it was called Murderapolis, but still finding some good in that and building on that. So to really have a unique brand story and that the, you know, people from where I'm from can identify with what they're wearing.
And do you give haircuts?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a part of fashion. We always joke and say if most guys from the urban sector could choose a haircut or a new T-shirt, they choose a haircut because the way your haircut makes you look fresher than a raggedy haircut with a nice new T-shirt. So they all kind of combine. They work together, you know.
But then haircuts, if you put a hat on, it covers it all up. Karen, why do you want to cover people's heads? Is that a statement?
Well, actually, I think hats have been a long history already, you know. So just enter to the 70s and people just stop wearing the hats, you know. And I think hat is a kind of represent your character, you know. So that's why I think we should wear more hats. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of fun to wear hats. I mean, we had one of those royal weddings a few months ago.
Yeah.
And there was nothing but hats. And then the queen has this huge hat, and it becomes the focus of attention, you know, the hats. I mean, usually when there's kind of celebrities around, you look at the dress for the women, and you don't even look at the men unless they have a wildly colored tuxedo on.
Oh, absolutely.
But those hats, wow. Did any of the hats you make go to London?
Not in the royal wedding, but I make a hat for Rebel Wilson in the Billboard ceremony.
Oh, Rebel Wilson.
Rebel Wilson, yeah.
Wow.
Billboard, was it the Billboard Awards?
Yeah. And then the other one is I sent a few hats to Harper Bazaar for Nicki Minaj to wear.
Wow.
And for the
Nicki Minaj, I've heard of her.
she's pretty wild.
Yeah. I mean, so you've had a little touch of celebrity there.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Huh. Now, I hate to say this, but you're not wearing a hat right now.
Well, because today is too windy.
Oh. It is.
Okay. So there's still, I thought they had pins or something to put on in that case. But maybe not. Well, Jana, how did you get to be like a co-founder of Fashion Week in Minnesota, of all places?
Well, the last 10 years, I have just been very involved with the local fashion community as a stylist and also as a writer. I've written for publications including Minnesota Monthly, Star Tribune, Vitamin, which was a production of Star Tribune that closed a few years ago.
All right.
And just been involved with the earlier iteration of Fashion Week, which existed, you know, years before 2008, 9, 10, around there. And, you know, just
had been talking with Sarah Edwards, who's a local stylist and producer in town. And she, you know, we were just like, this, there's so much great stuff going on. And we hear people saying there's no local fashion here. And we said, yes, there is. And we need to make a big statement of that. And let's get everyone together and get them on a calendar and make a big noise with it. So that's what we did.
Hmm. I think it was Oscar Wilde or one of those witty fellows that said, fashion is something that's so terrible, it has to be changed every year. You know, it comes and goes. But we do have the sense that fashion is kind of a transient thing, because you do have every fall and every spring, there's a new set of things. It's like, gee, what's wrong with the old ones? Why does fashion change? I mean, that's the sense of you've got to be in it, with it now, where, oh, those shoes are so last year.
I mean, I think we can all have our own, you know, answer to this, but I think, you know, fashion for me, and I think for a lot of people, it's a personal expression. And, you know, I hope most people are always constantly changing and we're always evolving. And
changing clothes.
And so we want to express that evolution and, you know, we don't want to stay the same. You know, there's always something new, what's exciting. You put something new on and exciting and you get excited, you know, you feel really good about what you're wearing. And
I couldn't agree more. And I think about the artistry of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, you know, the artist is always kind of inspired and you create something new. And if you have, I mean, it's kind of why they make new movies every year, right? And
you don't want to watch the same old ones.
They're iterations of the same thing, you know. But the colors change. I mean, color palettes are always changing, and you could have something that was very muted, and now we want a very, you know, vibrant kind of backdrop. And so some of it is just very nuanced, simple changes, but they mean a lot to the end user.
Hmm. Well, there's some organization that picks the color for the year.
Pantone.
Yeah. Now, I imagine, you know, God up there saying, okay, this shall be the color. I mean, why does everybody agree? Or don't they?
I don't think we do.
I don't think we do, actually. They show the about 10 colors of this year, you know, or each season they show 10 colors, you know. They think it is good for that season. But most of the time, it really depends on the designer's feeling and the creation, you know. So it is no need to follow their guidelines. You
it's
know?
Not a law.
It's not a law.
It's a promotional campaign to promote Pantone is what it is. So
yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
They're known as the kind of the king color makers for the year. But nevertheless, do a lot of people follow those colors? I mean, even though you might reject them, you don't have to follow them. Does it become dominant?
I'd say some of the bigger brands occasionally do, because, you know, they want to stay to the vest to make sure they're, you know, on trend.
And I will say most, you know, designer lines, they plan their lines out for the, you know, the year before. Mm. And so by the time they've already designed it and it's already been on the runway, you know, it's not going to affect that choice because that's already happened.
Okay, because the very timeline of conception, design, production, and then performance on the runway, that takes how long? What, a year?
More than a year, I would say.
I think so, yeah. And actually, I think when Pantone announced those colors of the season, basically they did a lot of research. They have somebody to go to the fashion show, you know, and see each designer what car they use.
So it could be the designers are influencing Pantone's decision.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ah, well, that makes more sense. I feel better now. And Houston, that's a good point. It's the artists are always creating new things because, let's face it, life changes. And so there's always something new going on in the world.
There is. I mean, last year there was a big, you know, fashion and social consciousness. Mm-hmm. You know, you saw it a lot on the runway, signage. One of my favorite designers, Brooklyn Circus, they just released a new line called Criminal Minded. And they took their influence from, you know, Tupac and some of the early, you know, chain gang. They use a lot of stripes and a lot of oranges to kind of talk about mass incarceration of men of color. You know, so it's one of those, you get every year someone, you know, using whatever feeling or whatever they want to emote on the runway. And it now more than ever, it's very social. Folks are really trying to make a statement. with the collections that they're creating.
Well, it used to be, I mean, I used to cover the arts years ago, and there'd be some big political happening, and I'd ask an actor, and they'd say, well, no, I'm only an actor. I don't think about any political things, and I won't comment. And now, you're right, it's getting all jumbled up, because you have to, kind of. Social issues are affecting everybody.
Everybody. I mean, art imitates life. And more, the things that you wear matter. Where the money is going, where the fabrics come from, the mills that the folks who are making these garments are working in. Local is huge right now. The more local you can create.
Right. I remember when you could only buy big brands of beer. If you wanted something different, you'd have to buy a foreign label. And now they have all the craft brews.
Yeah.
So you're like the craft brew for the fashion industry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, well, and craft, that's actually a part of it. You need people to make these things too, mm-hmm. right,
There's
Jana?
A craft involved with it, and I think Karen could really speak to that too. Because you are handcrafting everything.
Yeah, so basically all my hacks is my own design. They are my own design, and I handmade each of them. And yeah, so I bought all the fabric and then used the, I have a hat form in wood, so I just steam it and then make it into the shape.
How did you start?
How did I start?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I mean, when I was young, I was 3 years old, I always wanted to be a designer.
At three?
Yes.
Oh, come on.
What because...
These blocks, I don't like stacking these blocks. I need better blocks.
No, I mean, at that point, I wasn't thinking about to be a milliner. I want to be a designer because my mom likes shopping.
Oh.
And dress me up, you know. So that's why I love fashion very much. And then, so unfortunately, I cannot draw my idea into 2D. So
you can't draw it out.
I can't draw it out. I can think about it, but I can't draw it.
So how do you get your idea on, how do you communicate your idea?
So right now, it's all in my mind, and then I just, make the hacks by experiments.
Oh, so you actually go right to the hat and skip the sketch?
Yeah.
Oh.
So when I was growing up and I have low opportunity to learn fashion design until I met my husband, and he brought me to Royal Ascot in England. So that is another Kentucky Derby version.
Oh, the bigger racetrack.
Yes.
And that's known for being very fancy and fashionable, right?
Yes. So the Queen went to the Royal Ascot every day, and people guess what color of bedding, what color she wear today, you know. Yeah, so, and then at that point, I'm thinking, well, maybe I can make my dreams come true. So I try to, learn from different milliners in England and Australia.
Boy, so you had a lot of good influences, global influences. That's happening to the Twin Cities now. I mean, we've always had some global connections, and that seems to have multiplied a lot, whether it's through business transactions or immigrants or refugees. There's so much... Mm-hmm. International presence in the Twin Cities, that must bring lots of ideas for you guys.
Yeah, it is. I agree, yeah. So, I mean, like me, I like the Orient elements, you know. And so I just put the elements in my head design.
Mm. So, Jana, have you seen a change in greater social consciousness and a greater global influence in the years that you've been involved in fashion?
I think especially in the last couple of years, in the beginning it was really just about fashion and wearing, fun things and wearing, shopping local, supporting local designers. But yeah, it's definitely, I think what Fashion Week has tried to do is try to hold up a mirror to what is happening in the Twin Cities fashion scene and just respond to that. So either people are reaching out to us to be part of the lineup, or we are seeing great work that other people are doing and we say, we invite them to be part of it. And just keeping our eye out for what's happening, I think you can really see with how the lineup has just expanded and become more inclusive and more diverse as we're connecting more and more with people throughout the community. And there's actually one designer that comes to mind, Aisha Umar. Her line is Fullback Closet. And she's I believe from Nigeria, and she's showing a line as part of Fashion Week on Monday. I believe it's the 24th.
Right, because we're talking Fashion Week. What are the dates for Fashion Week?
It's the officially the 23rd through the 29th
of September.
Okay. And there are a couple events, kind of a little bit outside of that boundary. The kickoff event is on the 20th at the W, and several other events throughout within that time span.
Well, I bet it gives people a chance to dress up to go to these openings, right?
Exactly. Yes.
So that's kind of the. I'll do this quickly, but in my lifetime, I was in football in high school, and there was something about getting your all your equipment on and your helmet and your shoes, and and you just felt ready. You just went out there and you felt ready. And I assume that's what fashion is. At some point, you dress up, you put on the right hat and the right clothes, and you feel ready to go out there and socialize in the world. Is there a sense of that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's your uniform. I always say the wardrobe of an era reflects the times and the participants therein. So every era has a uniform. Hmm. You know, from the 60s, there's a very similar uniform in every other decade. And so it's like these clothes, like the music, kind of define the times in which we live, which is the importance of fashion to me.
Hmm. Well, talking about the importance of fashion, and then in Minnesota, you have people like me that don't always stick with the trends, but we'll find out more about that when we return here on Synapse Think Tank of the Year.
Synapse Think Tank of the Year. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back talking about fashion here in Minnesota, which almost sounds like a contradiction in terms, you know, fashion in Minnesota. And I think that the overwhelming, you know, mainstream population is very conservative here. I mean, Minnesota, I think a lot of people think that they're so liberal, but I don't think they're liberal when it comes to displaying themselves, because the old the Lutheran attitude, well, you don't want to show off. You don't want to stand out. But fashion, that's all about, you know, strutting and kind of showing off and like you say, self-expression.
Yeah, it is. You know, I'm a minimalist by nature, right? So sometimes the blue blazer, the white shirt, and the right jeans and penny loafers is very chic. And it just, it's not necessarily what you wear, it's how you wear it. So to your point, I mean, there are a lot of, Minnesota does strike me as being very conservative. Even some of the buyers, there's some brands that we just don't buy here in department stores because you just can't turn it. Because by and large, I think that is true. When I go out to New York City, gosh, the train is like a runway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw some of the most interesting stuff just riding the D train, right? Like. And sometimes I wish Minnesota would be a little, and I shouldn't say that, because there are a lot of folks, if you're in the fashion scene, who are very creative in the way they put things together, but you don't typically walk downtown Minneapolis and see a whole lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, well, like I say, sometimes it sticks out, but I should mention here, we're talking with Houston White, who's kind of an entrepreneur. You got a barbershop and a store, and plus you design things, right?
Sure.
So, and we're here with Karen Morris, who's a millinery or millinist. How do you call it?
Milliner. Yeah.
Milliner.
Yeah. Yep.
Milliner. Okay. She's a women's hat maker. And then we have Jana Pelequin, who's a co-founder and co-artistic director, I presume. Some fancy title like that for Fashion Week Minnesota, which comes in latter part of September. Talking about Minnesota is not quite the fashion scene as compared to New York, but I think it's changed a lot even in the last couple decades. To what extent is there kind of a fashion crowd in Minnesota? Just for comparison, in terms of theater, I think there are more theaters per capita in Minnesota than any place but New York. So it's something like that. But is fashion on par with that?
I mean, I think we have like our own unique communities. And if you go to any of these events throughout the course of Fashion Week, we have 25 events, you will see people that have really unique, different style and, you know, enjoy getting dressed and enjoy dressing up for these types of events and just in their everyday lives too. So it's just like anything else. It's this, it's a certain group of people, but they're going to be showing their personal style. And it's really truly unique to Minnesota, Minneapolis, I think. It's pretty eclectic. I think people kind of wear, you know, show off their individuality here a little, maybe more than the coasts. I think it's pretty, it's a pretty interesting mix of people.
Say that again, we show off our individuality more than the coasts.
I think, personally, I think that, you know, we're not New York, we're not LA. And you think of New York fashion as this very, you know, stark, bold, strong kind of look. And LA is very laid back. I think Minnesota is somewhere, you know, in between that. And I think we're constantly redefining what that is. So.
Well, it's good to know that there's a strong fashion element because, well, just to spice things up, if nothing else, I mean, to make the place more interesting.
Yeah, and I think Minnesota is growing up. It's not as a mature market like New York or LA, you know. And I think because Minnesota got a history of farming, you know, people are more conservative, you know. And
but bib overalls and then your yes. hat from some tractor manufacturer.
Yeah, but I think because of the information, more youngsters got more information from the internet, from social media, you know, and we see more stuff from around the world. And they, I mean, a lot of youngsters, I mean, they are trying to dress up now. Yeah. So I think we are just going up, you know. I can see maybe Minnesota in 10 years, maybe in another New York. Who knows, you know.
Well, we keep trying to do that. I think for a while they're trying to call it the mini apple, you know, things like that. Yeah, we're just like New York, but or the North Coast. Mm-hmm. We're the North Coast.
I kind of think we got our own thing going, though. You know,
I agree. I don't want to be New York. You know, I really like the vibe in Minnesota, and I like the diversity. It's really fun to, you know, be at a bar and see so many different types of styles. It doesn't come off as inauthentic or trendy. It's just like, mm-hmm. to Jana's point, it's personal. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy it, you know. I like it, you know.
Hmm. Now, I'm just imagining what the flow would be for someone making a career in fashion. Is there an ideal that, boy, I'm going to, you know, make some sketches, sit in my attic and make some sketches and someone's going to pick it up and before you know it, I'm selling things all around the world. They're going to be in Target or, you know, some upscale store. Is that the dream of fashion, or is it not everyone have those big ambitions?
Well, I guess I can speak for myself. My goal is to create an iconic brand. It's a slow, steady process. There's a lot of discovery. There's a lot to learn.
So someone say, oh, that looks like a Houston White.
Yeah. You know, I want things to be able to be, you know, to create things that are classic. And, you know, one of my...
A new classic.
I love khakis. Some folks are like, khakis are so like my dad. Dockers, are you kidding me? But I personally want to kind of redefine the khaki, right? And that's a personal thing for me. And if I get it right, it's something that could be a 20 or 30 year staple. I could get it wrong, and that's okay. But the explorer in me just tries again. And eventually, and I've had a lot of that. I've had some things I've created that have been very successful, very well received.
Like what?
The most, oddly enough, the most successful thing I've ever created is a t-shirt with a simple slogan that says Black Excellence.
Mm.
We have that shirt that we shipped to Dubai 2 weeks ago. Mm. That was the wildest thing ever.
Mm. Wow. Did like a store ordered a bunch of them?
No. On our website, we had a Dubai order come in. Because certain orders come in as fraudulent or is this potential. And I'm looking and it's like, whoa, that's a Dubai. And multiple shirts, but it was a, you know, one person. And Floyd Mayweather, he wore our hat. And it's been one of those very simple but out of the park, kind of right time, right color, right logo. Because we have multiple logos, but there's a particular black logo that just resonates. You know, it's branding in the sense, like, you know, you see Apple or you see Gap, and that just identifies with people.
Well, black excellence, too, that's a social statement.
Oh, very much so. It's how I've always identified. I'm from the South, and excellence just meant that you took pride in who you are.
So you're not from the Twin Cities?
I was born in Jackson, Mississippi, but, you know, okay. I've been here for 33 years, and I...
So you're still kind of a newcomer, but...
kind of. You know, we were having this conversation on social media. But, you know, I don't know, you know, I'm fascinated because my grandmother used to make hats, and
okay. This
is like amazing to me sitting in a room with someone.
The hat maker.
Yeah, so actually making hats, I mean, to your question, I feel like, especially my industry is got a very niche market. So not like you, so maybe, I mean, you sell t-shirt, design a t-shirt, can be sold very, very well, you know. Sure. But for the hat, what we need to do is we want to have some buyer to buy it, and then all over the world.
Yeah. Okay,
just so like
a big order.
Yeah, big order. Otherwise, actually, it's very hard to cover all the expenses, you know.
So when you, since you don't draw a design,
mm-hmm.
So when you make a hat, does that become a model for other hats? And so it's like, make 1,000 of these?
Yes. I mean, of course, not only me make 1,000, that's impossible.
You can't do it, but you give it's like it, a sample.
Yeah, just a sample, yes.
So then you have somebody, some factory
set
up.
Yeah, a team, yeah. So, so that is my dream to do that because, as I say, you know, hat just too niche, you know. You need to create something pretty special for the people.
Can you describe your best-selling hat?
Well, my best-selling hat, I think, is the top hat, the mini top hat.
Yeah. Mini top hat?
Yeah, it's just very small, like maybe half of the hat, you know. And, so mini top hat, because I have a lot of... when you mention craft, I have a lot of customer. They do costume, and they maybe they work in Renaissance as well, you know. And those top hats, they're favorite.
When the Renaissance Festival, or
actually, it's ongoing right now. Mm-hmm. Start 3 weeks ago until first week of October.
So more people that dress up, kind of costume.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Because think of hats. I think. Historically, John F. Kennedy was famous as the first president who didn't wear a hat to his inauguration. And then in the 60s, men stopped wearing hats. And now it's put on as kind of an Indiana Jones or one of those fancy things, or like a Humphrey Bogart hat, those kinds. It looks kind of cool, and I bet you feel cool,
yeah. But
it's still not really widespread.
Not so much. I enjoy hats. I mean, my favorite is a newsboy cap. You know, 1920s, 30s kind of style.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I see a lot of it in the barbershop where, especially in the fall, where you know, guys are wearing different types of hats. It's not the common thing that it was years ago.
Everybody had to
everyone
wear one.
Men, actually men love hat more than women.
Really?
Yes. they just love hat. They will very appreciate the craftsmanship of the hat.
Mm.
Yeah, so
it feels good.
Yes, and they will ask for the most good quality, you know, and they don't care about the price, you know, but they just want to have a good hat.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah.
One of the things that puzzles me here in Minnesota. I mean, it gets, 20 below, and then there's a wind chill for another 20 degrees off that. And people walk around with no hat. I mean, what is it about they don't want to wear a winter hat? I mean, it's so cold. You lose, 90% of your body heat out of your head. That's when, or could even be higher. But why don't people even wear a hat in the winter?
Well, I still think, as we mentioned, I mean, Minnesota fashion still going, you know, and you know, and I think people just saw a lot of Minnesotan. They didn't have a hat on. They scared. They scared to, if I wear one, do people think I'm crazy or weird or something like that, you know. But you know, we just lead somebody coming out and wear the hat and everybody follow. Be more courage, yeah, to wear one.
And
yeah.
I say whenever I wear a hat, I get so many compliments on it.
Yes,
and
exactly.
So, you know, if more people saw more people wearing hats,
yeah,
it would become more normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. And some of it I think is the hair too. It's like, I don't want to mess my hair.
Or when you don't want to do your hair though, then
totally.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Then you can wear your hat full day. You don't need to take it off.
Yes. Talking here about Fashion Week Minnesota with Jonna Pelequin, Karen Morris, and Houston White. Do you think you're having an effect on people? I mean, can you see people wearing your stuff when you go around?
Yes. I get phone calls all the time, or text messages, or random sightings from all over the country. Like, I saw somebody in your stuff, you know? which has been part of the strategy for me, is the brand and get notoriety. I have some very, to your point, niche stuff that I want to do. But I think when you're trying to create a name for yourself, it's important that people know you. Because it's like, it builds a little bit of brand equity. Oh, if it's coming from them, it must be. It's very hard to break into the fashion scene from the luxury or very high end price point, just because folks compare you to existing long standing designers. And so it's been my approach. Not that it's the best; it's just mine. But yeah, a lot of folks call and say, "I seen your stuff.
I saw your hat. I saw your shirt." Well, Jonna, now you mentioned that you've written about fashion. Mm-hmm. Have you designed anything yourself? I mean, do you put your hands into it?
No, I've enjoyed working with designers as a stylist, and that's been fun to help kind of interpret pieces that they've created.
What's a stylist?
So I have basically helped create and direct shoots where, you know, I will come up with a concept, and this isn't always the case. But I usually have been the one to come up with a concept or collaborate on a concept and help make that come to life with clothing as a big part of it.
So there's this dress,
the clothing,
and
accessories,
this hat, and you put it all together and to make a scenario.
Right. And usually there's, you know, several images. So all those, you know, looks, how do they connect with each other? And usually there's, you know, a theme and a story that you're trying to tell. So I kind of look at it as storytelling. You know, I write and I'm a storyteller in that way, but I've also been a storyteller with fashion.
Wow, so clothes are like paragraphs for you. You just put them together.
Or like words and sentences.
Sentences, little things. And so makeup would have to be part of that.
So that's usually, you know, it's a makeup artist or hairstylist, and I'm not, that's people, finely trained people.
But you direct that.
A lot of times it's usually a collaboration, or I might give, you know, here's the general, you know, vibe we're going for, here's a story, and let them sort of have their own interpretation of what that is, and, you know, have their own contribution to it.
Wow, a fashion shoot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another thing that sounds odd in Minnesota. I can't talk to you right now. I'm on my way to a fashion shoot.
I mean, there's not a ton of it anymore, but you will, you know, you might see it a lot more online, a lot of online publications and social media. You're seeing shoots be presented that way, not as much in print anymore, just with, you know, fewer and fewer publications. But then people are turning to social media, and they're turning to web to make those visions come to life. So
boy, when you have your fashion week, do the TV stations come?
We usually do some you know, we'll go to the actual TV studio and usually sometimes bring some models that are styled, previewing some looks, and then they'll talk about it in advance. I think maybe a couple times they've come and actually shot, but usually it's more of a preview.
Can a model make a living as a model in the Twin Cities?
Not as a runway model. As a commercial model, you could make a living in the Twin Cities as a commercial model.
Oh, doing commercials, but not just showing off clothes.
Commercial model meaning more, you know, advertisements,
right?
Less fashion focused, less edgy, more, you know, this more relatable. Sort
sell
of everyday.
This shirt.
Yes, we definitely have, you know, that industry here. But to be like a runway model, you're not necessarily making the big money doing that, but that's sort of usually the fun thing you're doing, and a way to get your name out there and a way to get experience.
Okay, well, so. there's a career waiting to happen in the Twin Cities fashion model. We're here talking with people that are participating in the upcoming Fashion Week Minnesota in later September. The co-founder, Jana Pelequin, is here with us. Also, Karen Morris, a milliner from Hong Kong. And now maybe you'd learn how to make those Minnesota winter hats.
Yes.
So doing that. And then Houston White, who was a Southerner, now he's on the North Side. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
You switched around and focusing on Black X. We'll be back in a moment.
Synapse, think tank of the air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back on Synapse Think Tank of the Air with Jana Pelequin, Karen Morris, and Houston White. And, you know, I'm older than all of you. I just add all your ages together. That's probably my age. But some of the things that I mentioned that I dress to feel comfortable. You know, I'm one of those. But I also dress for the occasion. I'll change this. You know, I've got a tuxedo for that. I've got cutoff jeans for that. And, you know, you just whatever fits in. But my wife and daughter are my fashion critics. And they'll say, Dad, you're not going to wear those socks, are you? Everybody wears these cutoff socks now. And it's like, you know, you do something for so long and it's just so normal, but yet you don't fit into the world anymore. What am I supposed to do?
I always say, do you.
Be myself. Well,
whatever feels comfortable.
I'm going to get one of those, your t-shirts.
Well, that's fashion, right? It's what feels comfortable. And there's many roles to play in the fashion industry. Some folks are very good behind the scenes. They're stylists. It's kind of like one of my favorite hip-hop groups, Nerd. Pharrell is very much so out front, but one of the most important parts of that group is, you know, Chad, his partner. Very few people know who he is, but, you know, that's fashion, where you might have someone who's a brilliant sketch artist and has probably zero fashion sense, but they can visualize things. So I always say, just do you, play your position. And we all have a little bit of style, albeit, you know.
Okay. I'll tell him that.
Tell him that.
Tell him that. Tell him any advice from you, Karen?
I agree with Houston, you know, because... To be honest, I'm a designer, but I don't dress up quite often because I just want to make myself feel comfy, especially when I make the hat. I need to have a lot of action, you know, and different kind of posture to make the hats. So I want to dress up comfy.
You have to be flexible.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, you can dress up very nice and follow the trend, but... when you go out, you don't feel comfy and you walk weirdly, people just laugh at you, you know. People don't think you are fashionable or anything, you know. So just be comfy, be yourself.
So it's not merely the clothing itself, it's how you feel in it and how you exude yourself in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Any advice from you, Jana? Do you walk down the street and say, oh, that's the ugliest outfit I ever saw? Are you a critical fashion person?
Oh, you know, once in a while something will catch my eye that's really horrible and I'll notice it. But for the most part, I just notice when people are wearing something interesting and cool. And I don't know, sometimes I think bad taste is better than no taste, you know? I think if something catches my eye, I think, why did that catch my eye? And that's interesting. But I do think, you know, you can definitely tell when someone is not comfortable and they are not confident with what they're wearing. It stands out for the wrong reasons. And I say, wear what makes you comfortable. You know, I've done some personal styling for people in the past, and you know, you sort of look at what do they wear, what are they comfortable in, what are they attracted to, and then how do I just elevate that a little bit and kind of push them a little bit out of their comfort zone. But you never want to put someone in clothes that are just not them, because they won't ever feel comfortable. They won't feel good about themselves in that. So I think that's the most important thing. And I'm not judgmental about, you know, people, how they dress. You know, everyone's just, you have to get through your day and be comfortable doing what you need to do. So,
Some of it's superficial. I remember when I was a kid, in our neighborhood, it was very fashion conscious, but in a rather shallow way. It's like, this is in.
Right.
So you've got to do that, otherwise you're out. And so I think in those days, it was button-down shirts. You had to have a button-down shirt, and there was a little loop in the back. If you had a shirt that didn't have a loop, oh, you weren't in. And so it's not that you were expressing yourself. You're just trying to portray what some ideal that somebody invented. You know, I'm trying to be in style, and you don't want to fall out of style just to be cool.
Yeah.
But then I look at it, it's not very cool to just try to follow the template.
Because when you have a lot of friends besides you, that influence will put you dress up just like them, you know, and in their mind just, oh, this should be normal. If you don't follow this trend, you're a lot normal, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's why you see a lot of people walking along the street wearing the same thing, even though, you know, they're not twins or mother daughter trying to look the same, but they just tend to buy the same kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think what's interesting now at this time we're in, I feel like so many things are in style. There's so many, you know, trends, quote unquote. But things aren't really going out of style. It's like that thing that we were wearing 5 years ago is still cool. You know, there's not, you know, it's bohemian, it's minimal, it's all over the place. And, you know, a lot of sportswear influences, but there's still like glam going on. There's all kinds of things. So it's sort of hard to be out of style if you're doing something that, you know, if you're wearing something and you like it, I think you can just own that.
Yeah, I mean, it's about authenticity, right?
Right.
You know,
authenticity is in style.
It is. It's not.
I'm feeling pretty authentic today.
It's not necessarily what you wear; it's how you wear it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about personal confidence. If you're confident, and the outfit could be completely hideous to someone else, but they feel your confidence, and they could grow to be persuaded otherwise. Like, I didn't like that at all, but you're rocking it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You can have a jersey, your sports jersey, be fashionable, right? Yeah.
Well, then, you know, the models, that's the stereotype. The model is like some super skinny person that might be beautiful, but not how most people look. So how do you idealize a garment on a runway, knowing that it won't look that way with a normal person on the street?
I think that there's a lot more body diversity, racial diversity happening in age diversity happening within the fashion industry right now.
It's changing.
I hope that continues.
So I'm using an old stereotype.
I mean, it's still maybe the mainstream, but I think it's more and more you're seeing brands use models of different sizes on the runway and different, you know, colors of the skin, and even like older models you're seeing, and more than ever before. And I think that's a promising, because I think people do, you know, I think they're realizing people want to see people that look like them wearing the clothing, you know, and say, well, I can wear that. Like, I can relate to that. I can picture myself in that.
I know you're seeing more in the advertising world, more large sizes than before. It's becoming a thing, right? Because many people are in the larger size area.
Right. There are very, very tiny percentage of people that are a size zero and a 5 foot nine.
So. Is that really a size zero they wear, zero?
The traditional models on the runway.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's like nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I always, for me personally, I like to create things that I can imagine my wife or my sister or my unborn daughter wearing one day. It is important that the models, our last time on the runway was during Black Fashion Week, and we had a model. Our first model up has been in the industry for quite some time, and she was referred to as a mature model. She's in her 40s, but still beautiful, but didn't fit the traditional mold, but absolutely works the runway. Hmm. So you know, I think it's important to put people on the runway that, that reflect the reality of most of the population.
Hmm.
And nothing against, I mean, the bold, high, traditional, you know, very thin, that can be, that's fun too to see at times, but it shouldn't be just that one standard.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, so I agree. And sometimes when I create the hacks, it also depends on the style of the products. And I create something wide brim is, I mean, they meant to go to maybe higher age women to wear it, you know. And when you find a model like, 20 years old, you just feel the feeling not really compatible, you know. So, I use any, like, skin color, or you tall or short, or I mean, whatever age, you know, to wear my hacks as a model.
Hmm. So it changes. I had a kind of a realization. Now this is back in the 80s. I had a couple years in a row where I was able to spend some time in Paris, and then some time in Montreal. And the thing that I noticed, now Montreal, they have like a couple streets that are kind of like Paris, you know, full of all these cafes and stuff. And so then I hung around there. And what I noticed was in Montreal, everybody was really trying to be cool, wearing new fashionable clothes and looking very sharp. But in Paris, sometimes it could be, you could tell it was older clothes, but then just the way they had a scarf, they had style. So it's like there was greater authenticity, even with the old clothes, just making do with what you had, rather than just getting all new stuff and strutting around the cafes. So,
yeah, I think so, because that's why there's a lot of book to show you how the French woman dressed, you know, because they don't buy, I would say they will use all the existing clothing, just dress up, maybe just As you say, a scarf or a jacket, or just roll up the sleeve, you know, and you can create a very sharp, beautiful appearance already. So, yeah. So I think we no need to buy every time you need to buy the new thing to make yourself sharp. Mm-hmm. You can make use what you have.
Hmm.
I think it's more stylish to look like, you know, to not look like you're trying too hard, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's what it came off as. Mm-hmm. You know, these people are so shiny.
Yeah.
You know, something's a little not natural. Not natural.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Red Wing boots. You know, the more you wear them, the more worn, the better they get. And you see guys just riding their bikes with those Red Wings and the jeans rolled up. To me, that's a fashion spread. No, seriously. I mean, it's like a lifestyle spread, you know, because these clothes should be meant to be lived in. And some things that are worn. I noticed a woman at IKEA a couple of weeks ago. She had some penny loafers on. And I had been looking for loafers forever. But she had the what I say, the real ones.
Mm.
And she inspired me to go home and get online. And I ordered some. But she said she had them for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they look fantastic. So.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what's good about having a classic fashion. That's always good,
mm-hmm.
and then still seeming fresh.
Yeah.
That versus some fashions that look so old that they're done. You know what I mean? It's like it's never going to be cool again in its life. Mm-hmm. And you think of anything like that? Like, what did they have? The culottes or some sort of?
Yeah, I think part of the reason that I'm really passionate about local fashion, supporting it, is a lot of these pieces, they are made really well. They're made to last years. They're not about this quick trend. It's really about, you know, really timeless pieces that you can have in your closet, and it's for years, and it's worth spending the money on, because like you said, you could have something for 25 years and it's still holding shape. It's still together. It's not just a trend. It's not made with poor materials. So, you know, you're spending a little bit more, but you're able to keep that for decades maybe.
Is there much do-it-yourself fashion in the Twin Cities? People making their own clothes just to wear for themselves, or Or is it mainly...
Maybe in like the punk scene, you know, the underground. Scene. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, so a lot of the African designers, I see a lot. There are a few, but it's very time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to make garments from head to toe.
Yeah, I mean, you might take something and kind of customize it. Sure. I see a little bit of that, you know. And I think some of us, like, I have very basic skills with the sewing machine, but I could do a little bit of something to kind of tweak the fit or customize it and make it feel a little special or unique. Mm. But
and there's some up and coming, manufacturers here in the cities. One of them I went to a class, Clothier Design Source.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. I mean, they are making things here in Twin Cities. So obviously it's more of a mass production, but they're a limited run manufacturer, kind of in the 250 range, which is very small for manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
But they make, quality goods.
But part of that formula then is that it's each one's more expensive to sell, right? The bigger the run, the cheaper it gets?
Sure, sure. Which is why a lot of folks are manufacturing overseas.
Do either of you do that, get a template and have it made in China, for example, where it might be cheaper to produce, at least before the tariffs?
Well, I think because actually my background also on merchandising, so I have a lot of experience to deal with the Chinese factory. But to be honest, what you make, what you make and you send to the China to make it, you can see a big difference.
It doesn't come back the way you wanted it?
I can tell you they can copy very well. You can't see the difference. But the materials they use it's just not, you don't feel like got a unique point. That's what all the designer wants to bring out through their fashion. You need to get your product be unique. But main China, just factory. You can tell.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time here. I just want to talk about the future. Is there such a thing as trends anymore that kind of hit all areas of fashion, or is it so diverse that it really you really can't say? So the question is, is there a trend coming up that you foresee?
So maybe Jenna.
Okay, Jenna.
I need to think about that. I think we're moving in this more global, realm with, help thanks to social media and many things like that. And I think a lot of different styles of fashion are being influenced by each other. There's a lot of cross-pollination. You're seeing sportswear being brought into, like, couture. And, you're seeing sportswear brands embracing elements of fashion, more high fashion. So I think there's just like a lot of cross-pollination, a lot of collaboration, a lot of various influences, taking a little bit of this culture and a little bit of this and a little bit of this and putting it together into something new.
That's like what's happening in food.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, totally. Yeah. I mean, Jana made a very good point because I see it, collaboration. I collaborate a lot with artists. We do something called Smart Collections, and it's showcasing multicultural art through fashion. And it's something as simple as either a jean jacket or, say, overalls or a leather coat. We take and we have an artist paint an original piece on it. Mm-hmm. But in a T-shirt, since we'll mass produce maybe 50, and then the artist will sell the actual original. And so it's just a unique way for folks to participate in art and fashion and mesh them up. And that's what I see a lot of. Out of the box thinking, like, what is couture? What is high fashion? What is sportswear? It's kind of in this mode of redefinition. Mm-hmm. And it's fun. It's a really fun time to be in this industry.
Mm-hmm. Sounds wide open. Any final comments there?
Well,
Karen?
I think, I agree with Houston and Jenna too. I think more collaboration is the trend, And right now in my upcoming fashion event, fashion show in Fashion Week, I also work with different designer to put their dress elements to my hat as well.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, we're about out of time, but where can people go to find out more about Fashion Week and to make reservations to go see all these creations?
Yeah, the calendar is listed at fashionweekmn.com. And you can buy tickets to all the events. Some of the events, I know your event is unticketed free, Houston.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of free events, but there's also ticketed events as well. And, all these producers people that are putting on these shows are usually the designers, the brand owners that are making this happen with, you know, they're trying to get it together with limited resources. So buying a ticket to these events helps support what they're doing in their businesses as well. So get out there and buy those tickets.
And they won't make fun of me if I show up wearing those socks that my wife hates?
They'll just assume you're making a personal style statement.
Okay. So. Just go there.
You'll start a trend.
Just be confident when you go.
You will be the unique one.
Yay. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Talking with Jonna Peliquin, Karen Morris, and Houston White. And buy all of their things. Wear some new hats and t-shirts in the upcoming year. That's it for this edition of Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'd like to thank Dan Culhane, our producer du jour.
Thank you for listening to Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.
Seeing celebrities' posts, me in the 90s versus now. Well, the person staring at me in the mirror is definitely not the same person that could pull off bootcut jeans. Time creeps up on us so slowly, you don't see it until suddenly you do. Same thing goes for your bills. A dollar here, an uptick there, it's a slow burn until one day you realize the price you're paying now is way higher than when you signed up. But at T-Mobile, customers had the lowest wireless bills versus Verizon and AT&T over the past 5 years. And with T-Mobile on their experience plans, you get a 5-year price guarantee, so you know exactly what your plan price will be for the next 5 years. So at least that's one thing that won't change over time. I can't guarantee you'll still look good with frosted tips, but T-Mobile can give you a clear guarantee on your wireless plan.
Lower bills based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 21 to Q4 25 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. Price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Exclusions like taxes and fees apply. See T-Mobile.com.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple, it's refreshing!